All right, well, welcome everyone. Today we're going to start with a sketch plan review of St. Elmo Apartments. Just to give you a little background, this project came in and was approved by the planning board at lower height before the Bethesda downtown plan and design guidelines were approved. And so now they're coming back in because they were allocated more height through the plan, and they're going to align with that plan and design guidelines with this new project. So we're going to have a 10 to 15 minute presentation. This is all being recorded and will be placed on the website. And then afterwards, we'll give time if the public wants to speak, and then we'll have a discussion with the panel. Chow Joy Yu, for the record, is going to be recusing herself because she is on the development team for this project. All right.
Great.
So we can begin.
Thank you. Well, good morning. I'm Steve Robbins with the law firm of Lord Shirley and Brewer. I'm here with my colleague, Liz Rogers. It's a pleasure to be here today to present the St. Elmo Apartments project. Laura is correct. We have all of our approvals for a project that was approved about a year and a half ago. And then we went through the sector plan process, and the site was awarded additional height by the county council as part of the downtown Bethesda master plan. And we decided to, we participated in that process and are very excited about the opportunity to come back in and amend our approvals to utilize the additional height and to improve on the design as it relates to the sector plan and the design guidelines. So with that, why don't we just briefly introduce our team, starting with our clients.
I'm Ed Lincoln. We occupied this site starting in 1975 as our offices and moved out a year ago in March. And so there's a little extra sentimental value in the effort we're making, and it's feels very hope you like the project.
Liz?
Liz Rogers with Blair Turley.
Bill Lanfair with Bike of Maryland.
Elliot Roadside, Roadside and Harlow.
Craig Williams with David M. Schwartz Architect.
David Schwartz.
I think that's it. So, Craig, it's David. You and David.
And Elliot.
Okay.
It goes me, Elliot, Craig. I'm on Eddie's side. This project is special for me as well because I think the Lincoln Company hired me for the first time in about 1980. so I've been visiting this site for a long, long time now. It has a sentimental place in my heart because the Lincoln Company was instrumental in the foundations of my architecture firm. They were one of our early clients, one of our early clients for a bigger building. I have a strong affection for them and a long history with the site. Just so everyone's on the same page, wanted to make clear where the site was. This is where the fact that my pointer doesn't work doesn't help. But you can see the yellow square on the side of the left of Old Georgetown Road and Wisconsin Avenue. And then locating it in a slightly zoomed-in fashion in the Woodmont Triangle. So that's where the site is precisely. As you see, it runs from St. Elmo to Fairmont. This is looking down the street on St. Elmo from the southwest, and you can see the Bainbridge in the distance, and the site is right before the Bainbridge. You can also see the low-scale stuff that approaches that intersection. As we go southwest. This is looking the other direction, you can see the Bainbridge here, then the site, and then looking down to through all the low stuff that goes down to the old Georgetown intersection. On Fairmont Avenue side, there is this townhouse scale building, then the site, then the Bainbridge, and again, looking from the other direction, see the corner of the Bainbridge here, the site, and then that townhouse scale building that is on the other end of the site. We thought it was for us, difficult to talk about architecture without talking about how we make it. And in this site, we really wanted to come up with an innovative solution to an unusual site. One of the peculiar things about this site is that it actually has three major facades. The front and the back are normally major facades, or the front is normally a major facade. This site has two fronts because it has the Fairmont side and the St. Elmo side, but what in ways is our most important facade is not a front, it's a side. And the reason it's so important is because it is viewed from, you point out my side, that side, because it is viewed from such a great distance and will be the most viewed facade of this building. There's nothing tall between here and Old Georgetown Road, so you're going to see this facade of the building for quite a while to the southwest. We also wanted to build a building that was a landmark because we thought that with this tall building in this location, it really needed to be something quite special. And we wanted to enhance the public realm and create something that was Bethesda would be proud of. We're quite pleased with both the building and how it does that, and the pass-through, which Elliot will talk to you about later. Our office is known for materials and detailing, and if you look through our work and all the places that we do work, you'll see that we have highly articulate use of materials and massing. The way we go about designing a building is we study how the building program fits on the site first. The upper darker blue slides are looking at how you put the program, the full FAR, on the site. In the end, we then chose the massing that you see across the bottom, and these are studies as to how you adjust various parts of the building to create a sculpted effect that we like. We then do the same thing with elevations. We look at all sorts of different styles of elevations, from something that is quite modern in this case to something that's much more traditional here. But we look at all sorts of different ways of rendering the building and elevating the building to try and figure out what works best on the site and what works best for a particular building. We also are very interested in precedent. We spend a lot of time looking at other buildings in the neighborhood. We have a region. I don't know quite how to define the neighborhood. And we looked at this set of buildings, which are fairly traditional, but we also looked at some other buildings that began to carry the architectural time frame further forward. In this case, we also chose to look at a series of Dutch interwar buildings because these were the brick buildings that really began to move brick architecture into the modern movement. And we were not interested in doing a purely historic building here. We were interested in doing very much building of its time and of its place. And this was very helpful to us. Once we do our research and begin to understand what we think we're trying to do, we have to set about designing the building. And in this case, again, we went back to our precedents and looked at how they might influence our massing. And you can see, how on the southwest side, we massed the building to create a series of towers and to make the building a less massive slab from the side, and how on the St. Elmo side we made the centerpiece with a very tall vertical element to mark the entrance, and how on the Fairmont side we used another vertical element to mark the entrance to the passageway. So we really tried to make the massing and the detailing work to emphasize those portions of the buildings that were important to us. We looked again as to how we end our buildings, and you can see that what we've tried to do is, this is again that Old Georgetown Road facing side, to create a very articulate massing that will celebrate those two towers and make an interesting facade from a distance. And that goes throughout our design process, from vertical moments like our fins, and you can see, you know, we all recognize the Graham Bus Terminal, and there's some other buildings that we've looked at in other parts of the world, and how canopies can be dealt with as well, and how we dealt with our canopy. And the canopy, actually, the entrance of the building uses both the canopy and that very tall vertical fin to mark the entrance at different scales. One's a sidewalk scale, one's at the city scale. Balconies. This is particularly interesting to us. We started looking at these sorts of balconies when we did the Woodley Apartments in D.C. And here what happened was that we were across the lawn from the Wardman Tower. And you can see here their balconies, slide over here, which are really quite lovely. And we think, you know, are much better than those concrete things stuck on the edge of a building that have little metal rails. So many of them are done. So when we built next door, we did this one, which has a similar curved balcony. These are limestone. But then when we built this building at 13th and U, we used a similar sort of balcony, but used it quite differently, so that they each inflect towards the hyphen, which brings the centerpieces out and ties it back to the rest of the building. This is a project we're doing for BF Sol in Arlington at the moment. And again, it does something quite different with a similar form. It ties through here. And we wanted to play with that again here. And you can see our curved balconies here. What we wanted to do was to tie the sides into the front to make the building a coherent turn as it wraps the corner. Because this building is a three-dimensional building, and it is an object building. And we really thought that by setting back slightly, and creating this inflection, we could both mark the corner well and still tie the building together. This is not quite right. Yeah. Should never have touched the screen. There we go. Again, as I said, we wanted this to be a building very much of its time. And so we looked at a series of buildings, both historic and current. The two slides on the bottom are two buildings just recently completed in New York. You can see how much larger the glass becomes. But there's precedent for that in much earlier work. And so we spent a lot of time looking at how we would do that here, how we would have enough building facade of masonry to create a really very solid and stately building, but have enough glass so that all the apartments were quite light and airy. And again, we really like this idea of this glass corner detail, which you can see in here, which has a great deal of historical precedent. So this is the building itself. This is the floor plan. The left is St. Elmo's. The right is Fairmont. There are two small pieces of retail, one at the lower left of the screen, one at the upper right. The lobby is at the upper left, a leasing center and a tenant amenity space. The rest of the first floor is occupied by service, loading, parking ramp, and the like. As you go up, this is the typical tier plan. It is a combination of one, two, and three bedrooms. One of the things that we did that we think is interesting is on this side of the building, we made the unit much thinner, because the area to the next building is much smaller. So we were able to make the wide side of the unit glassy rather than the short side of the unit. And the rest of the building, we made the short sides of the unit, the glassy unit, but really tried to accommodate the difference in the narrower unit. We also cut back the building significantly in this direction and this direction for the sun angles as they reach the Bainbridge to really try and respect the building across the passage. The roof has the pool on it. The areas below the upper roof are a combination of terraces for tenant amenity and green roof. I'm going to take you around the building quickly, I hope. These are the two main facades. As I talked about, each are inflected towards what we think are important The St. Elmo's facade is inflected both towards its entrance and towards the passageway. The Fairmont side is reflected towards the passage. The side on the left is the old Georgetown Road facade, and the one that is visible from such a great distance. And we've spent a great deal of time trying to design the promenade facade such that it is interesting to look at, too, from the people who will be on the other side of the promenade. If you look at the building in three dimensions, you can see on the side on the left the inflection into the passageway and the concentration of energy on the entrance. As you come around the corner, and you can also look at the model and see this stuff. The model is a very hard building to understand in elevation because it's really all about its mass. But as you come around the corner, you can see the time and care we've put into making this facade. These balconies inflect into connecting the facades. These balconies are square to link these two and inflect into the center courtyard, and then again we go back to the curve. As we look at the building from Fairmont, again we can see how the curved balconies unite the building, how the setback above the base on the part nearest us begins to create more light and air, and how this bay inflects you back towards the promenade. These are the two St. Elmo views again, inflecting both towards the side facade and towards the promenade. The Fairmont views, which do something fairly similar. And we thought it was important to look at exactly how we enter the promenade, because the promenade is one of the main features of this building, one of the main public benefits. We see how the curved balconies draw you in and how the fin marks that from the city's escape perspective. And there we have the promenade, which means I'm done and Elliot gets to talk.
Done for a short period. My name's Elliot Roadside with Roadside and Harwell. We're landscape architects. This is a view of the promenade.
Page down is the way to advance.
This is a view of the promenade looking up from St. Elmo up to Fairmont. The important part about David's presentation related to our work are the rounded balconies at both the St. Elmo side and the Fairmont side. And we picked up on that on the development of the promenade in the forms of the various landscape elements. The focal point is the plinth sculpture. It's at the high point of the site. The site rises 6.5 feet. It's about a 3.5% slope gradient. So it's all about the plinth of sculpture and the movement of one through the space coming from the high point to the low point area. If you remember in David's presentation, he was talking about how the rounded edges of the building provide an important sort of aspect of tying the building to its location and tying the building to the ground plane. We worked a lot in developing the concept of how the hardscape would work. And the big concept, aside from the location of the plinth sculpture, is kind of a swoosh that takes the rounded part of the ends of the building and explodes it and uses that as a movement form through the promenade. So the highlights of the promenade plan include utilizing the Bethesda streetscape guidelines, which include brick paving on St. Elmo Street, the Olmos parvifolia trees with continuous tree panels on Fairmont, having continuous tree panels with honey locust trees. The swoosh comes in a little bit to the Bethesda streetscape, so as you're walking up Fairmont, you see the change in material. The plinth sculpture is looking down toward St. Elmo Street. On St. Elmo, the swoosh comes out into the Bethesda streetscape along the sidewalk and introduces you to the area. We utilized the curve and the curvilinear forms in order to make the space move visually and physically as much as possible. So we have two major components. One is the plinth sculpture, which will I'll describe in more detail. There's an oval planted area with a stainless steel edge, a black granite base for the plants of sculpture, a change in paving to highlight the importance of the sculpture, and then we have another oval which creates a dialogue between the sculpture and the landscape element with a sort of swoosh here with the wood deck, movable furnishings, planters, catenary lights to provide sort of indirect overhead lighting for the plaza, and just to make it really comfortable and distinctive and beautiful. The predominant paving material is granite. The swoosh is proposed to be granite cobble pavers. There are various types of granite paving in the area. We're proposing where the sitting area is a series of granite steps to come up to a sort of raised sitting area so you could sit along the promenade or sit up on the deck and have a comfortable place to relax and eat your lunch. This is an indication of the kind of material we're proposing for the base, the larger base around the plinth of sculpture with ground cover plants, and then the base for the sculpture itself. This is a view of the plinth of sculpture in Mr. Lincoln's garden. It's a really spectacular piece. It's stainless steel. It's about 8 feet tall. It's, I think, a really great piece of art. Plinth's work is located in all the major capital cities around the world. It's located, his work is located in major cities throughout the U.S. I think this will make a major contribution to Bethesda. It's the focal point around which everything else works in the promenade. So we love this view because most of the people in the apartments adjacent to it will be looking down on it. The more you get into the sculpture, the more you see. This is a view that you'll see coming up toward Fairmont Avenue. And the skirt, I think, is particularly fantastic. So when I saw this, I said it shouldn't be on a light background. It should be on a highly polished black granite base that sort of reflects everything, because everything is basically light, and it's all about the letters and the relationship of how it's put together. And then when you look at parts of it, it's just spectacular. So it's going to be all about the sculpture, and that's aside from the building and the site design. It's all about that beautiful piece of artwork. And this finally is our two views of how we're proposing to place the sculpture. There's a granite base. This is a view looking toward the St. Elmo building. This is a view looking from Fairmont Avenue at the high point. There's the sculpture, black granite base, ground cover.
Wow, you touched it.
I knew I would. I was going so well. The black granite base, the ground cover plantings, and then the small stainless steel planter edge. And we're proposing the stainless steel edge because it's flexible, and we wanted to create that beautiful oval to contain the ground cover plants. So I think that's it.
Okay. My colleagues have run a bit late, so I'm going to try and do this quickly, hitting some of the highlights, and if you have questions afterwards, rather than put you all to sleep. We have technical issues that we just want to clearly delineate that we've complied with. When we got the approval from the planning board for the lower height building a year or so ago, they made it very clear in the resolution that if we came back for additional height, we had to meet the new Bethesda design guidelines, which hadn't even been finalized at that time. And so I'm going to show you why we have met the specific prescriptive elements of the guidelines and in a couple cases where we've used alternate strategies that were allowed within the guidelines and certainly comply with the spirit of the guidelines. This is an overall roof plan that we submitted with a package of stuff that indicates the guideline passages and how we're complying, but I think it's actually much better to look at this three-dimensionally, much easier to understand. So starting with the St. Elmo side, the area outlined in green, we have a step back from the curb line of 15 feet, which was within the prescribed range. We then step back further. Oh, and then we've got balconies and stuff like that, which in the guidelines calls that balconies are not included as part of step backs and setbacks. They're allowed within it. We then, in lieu of the strict step back of an additional 10 to 15 feet above the 2 to 6 story line, we've actually taken the red portion of the building and stepped it back and divided it into two towers, if you will, partly because we thought it was the right massing, and also it allowed us an area within our own property line to put the electric vaults that we have to have. On the old Georgetown side of the building, which is highlighted in the blue here, rather than having any kind of blank party wall other than right down here where we're on the property line, we've stepped back continuously as the building goes up, as prescribed by the building code, to have the allowable percentages of glazing versus the distance back from the property line, and using the alternative treatment because we are a building of limited width, and we've also used a articulate tower top. On the old Fairmont side, we have at the ground plane here, we've aligned. Now I did it.
Mm-hmm. He thought he was perfect.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We've aligned with the townhouse structure on the lower three floors, and then we do have the literal 10-foot step back as called for the guidelines. On this piece here, we have a cantilevering projection which is less than the majority of the width of the building, which seems to be allowable under 2.4.4D. Additional step backs from the projecting piece and the curved balconies that David talked about. And then on the promenade side, again, we're returning to the alternate treatment to get a 2.5-foot difference for the tower separation. In the zoning code, we could have gotten our public benefit points by providing 15 feet of promenade. Instead, we are providing 20 feet of promenade. The tower separation would be required to be 22.5 feet, as half the 45-foot distance to the property line, and rather than having a silly 2.5-foot setback that would mess up our structural line and look very odd within the promenade, we're using the alternate treatment and saying that we will set back the full 20 feet of our previous building, which more than doubles the size of the existing promenade. I don't know if Elliot didn't really make it clear, but the Bainbridge provided a 15-foot promenade, and we are more than doubling it by 20 feet for 35 feet total, and we're keeping that even though we could only provide 15 feet in exchange for having the tower 2.5 feet closer. So again, if you have any specific questions, we can come back to it, but it could take hours to explain the details of everything here. And then lastly, the design advisory panel is also supposed to look at the exceptional design criteria, and we are specifically meeting four of the six, four of the seven guidelines, which should give us half of the available points. And I think David really went over this in the description of the building itself, but just to be clear, we think we've got a innovative solution that responds to the immediate context. I talked about how it aligned with the other buildings and like creating a sense of place and serves as a landmark. I think this is intuitively obvious that both facades really mark the streetscape. The St. Elmo, I mean, the old Georgetown Road facade will be a landmark for quite a distance, and the promenade itself is really a place, as Elliot described. Enhancing the public realm in a distinctive manner. A lot of these criteria are overlapping. The sculptural complexity of the building all tied together and linked by balconies, adhering to the design guidelines but still having a strong street presence, and then introducing materials, forms, or building methods unique to the vicinity. And the building will be predominantly unit masonry with some stone or cast stone detailing. And as David pointed out, this is neither merely copying a historic style from the past, nor is it a trendy, au courant project that will look dated in 10 years. It is meant to be a timeless building that people won't really know when it was built, but should, you know, provide a strong sense of place and human scale for the next century or more to come. So that's it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for the presentation.
Thank you.
We have about a half hour for discussion, so if there are brief comments from members of the public, if you'd like to.
I'd just like to thank the applicant for the 3D model and for the very clear explanations of what you tried to do.
Thank you.
Great.
And I would also like to thank you for the 3D model. It's very helpful to have that, especially with the building next to it. I absolutely love the sculpture. Is there lighting around the sculpture?
As the client, not the designer, there was a discussion at some point in time about having lighting in the base, uplighting the inside. I question whether that's a good idea. I can tell you that the sculpture itself, as the sun passes by it, has facets. So as the sun moves, the facet that's shining changes. So it actually has movement. I think the lighting should be from above, from the outside. At night, I have stationary lights on it. It looks great. It glows more because what's around it is pretty dark, and it looks great. So I think lighting from above or the sides
we have
is breathtaking.
Catenary lighting throughout the promenade, which will provide downlighting onto the sculpture, and it'll also kind of provide a horizontal plane to keep the promenade feeling human scale rather than the full height of the adjacent building.
So that brings me to my next point, which is the promenade and the cantilever that's happening with, I guess, some of the balconies. To me, that feels a little bit like a tunnel. I know it's going to be wider, but it feels like a tunnel today. I'm a little worried it's going to feel like a tunnel there. My second comment is on the west side. What happens when the next building comes up next door?
Yeah, we worked really carefully with David and his team on the development of what happens in this area. And in the earlier scheme, columns came down and really had a not very pleasant relationship with what happens here. I feel very comfortable with the podium and the series of steps and the seat wall in this area. And I think, I don't remember the dimension, it's up 20-some feet where the bottom of this, and I feel that it's up high enough and give spatial definition to the area. And there's so much else happening in that area that it's just another important point or series of points along the way as you're passing through the and passing along the promenade.
We don't have spaces like this in the D.C. metropolitan area. We have not really built cities before. And one of the things that's really interesting about the New Bethesda plan is your ambition is to be a city. And these are the kinds of spaces that can be enormously enriching to cities. You have a wider street. You come from a degree of openness. You come into a place of compression and intimacy, and then you go back into a more breathing space. So these are the kinds of spaces you find in a Chicago or New York, a place with big buildings. I'm not worried about the space because I think the Elliott has done once a building is 10 stories, it doesn't really matter how tall it is because you don't perceive the top of it. Your eyes have a cone of vision, and that's about what you perceive because you just keep going up. And what we wanted to do was to make this an intimate space that was a counterpoint to being on the street.
To address your second question about the old Georgetown roadside, to use a real estate term, currently that property is spiked and that Mr. Lankin owns two of the properties. From internal workings of our building, all the units that have windows on that side also have windows to the streets and to our little internal courtyard there. So we're not concerned if in the long range future something is built there. And lastly, for anything taller than what's there now to make economic sense, somebody would really have to acquire all the properties all the way to the corner, at which point they would have enough site width to then do their own, stepping back from the property line as required by the guidelines.
And the other problem is, any study this before proposed to do this building, one of the problems in building as you go towards Old Georgetown Road is next to Boston Park. That is the kind of problem that makes it a much safer. I think Eddie's insured himself. He's planning on building this as a rental building currently, and so he's going to own it for a while. And I don't think he'd be taking the risk of what's going to happen if he really thought somebody was going to ruin those apartments. Those are the best apartments in the world.
I'll start off. So this is actually the second time I'm seeing this project. I was on the art review panel,
right,
for your previous proposals, and I know that the applicant worked really thoroughly with staff and the art review panel and planning board and the placement of, and the design of that promenade with the Punza sculpture. I think this is a terrific presentation. Helped me understand the renderings that we had in our package. And seeing the thought process that went behind that. Not every building in Bethesda can be modern. I think you guys did a good job with the design of this site. One thing that I was thinking about, which I think I already have an answer to and kind of hearing this presentation, was I think going back to the promenade, just the scale of this, the straight wall of that building, I was going to suggest stepping back from the podium a bit to open that up, but I see the width of those units, and I just think that probably wouldn't be feasible to do.
This is a really narrow and difficult site. So in order to get the FAR to work, and in order to get the guidelines to work, there's not a lot that can move around a lot and have the project work on Amboy.
So if we were to have taken our old design and just added five typical floors, which we can't do because it wouldn't meet guidelines, but if we were to, the total additional square footage we could pick up would be, I think it's approximately 90,000 square feet. We're getting about two-thirds of that as it is. If we had to set back from Old Georgetown and set back further to make the scale of the promenade different, we wouldn't get enough of that to really even make going for the extra height worthwhile. It's an economic.
And the other thing is, if you look at the Old Georgetown Road facades and the Claremont facades are really important parts of this building. And if you think about setting back the building above a certain height, it makes those facades really peculiar. One of the things, and one of the things I want to commend you all on in your guidelines, is to leave left not flexibility, but architecture. But one of the things we believe is that bringing the building down to the street in places and anchoring the building in the street of the neighborhood, and if you turn the model around from your side, you'll see what I'm talking about, and making up the setback requirements by setting the other side of the building back is a much more creative way of doing a building. You get a much richer kind of a design. So we've tried very hard to be considerate of everybody in designing this building.
We thought it was very, very important to make sure we had enough street facade on both streets so that they felt like street facades and that it didn't feel like our building was sideways to the street, which is the danger when you end up with these tower separations and setbacks and stepbacks.
And the site is narrow enough that when this is about the only way you can do it, we think. We spent a lot of time looking at it.
So can I join this conversation a little bit? So, again, I think your presentation was really remarkable, really, really nicely done. Precedents are really great. I happen to be a big fan of Dutch architecture. I've been to the town hall in Hilversum several times. I think it's just one of the most magnificent modern buildings that's been created. And I don't really have a problem with the architecture, the massing, the articulation, but my concern is the space between this building and the Bainbridge. I like the scale of the pedestrian street. It seems very, very tight between the two buildings. I know you also own the building, the Bainbridge, correct?
No.
No?
These buildings here.
Oh, okay. I assumed
but we did work with the Bainbridge. Right now, the Bainbridge has, as was pointed out, half of that promenade. And as part of the original approval, we worked with the Bainbridge, and the Bainbridge actually amended their site plan to essentially join in and support the redoing of this whole passageway. So they're very much in support of this whole thing.
Fair enough, but the design guidelines do call for a 45 to 60-foot separation between towers.
Well, they also call for half of that distance to the property line, and we can't be held responsible.
Well, let me just probe this a little bit further. Did you look at moving the, let's call it the long arm of the tower, narrowing the courtyard on this side and pulling it in 10 feet?
We did.
In order to give 45 feet building face to building face?
We didn't look at it that way. We didn't look at it with metrics of that sort. We did look at what happens. As you can see, this building is a bar with two tower pieces.
Right.
And we did look at what happens as you slide the bar.
That's what I'm talking about.
We did look at that.
Yeah.
The answer we came up with for ourselves was that we felt eroding these corners more so that these views open up.
No,
it's a better way of solving the problem. There's no question but that we have a negative impact on about this much of the Bainbridge. But we don't think, all things considered, that on these ends, we do. So if you look at where the building ends and how the building works, and you read the guidelines in terms of how they deal with balconies, when you come into these areas, we are setting back a good bit. The only place that we're really close is here. And what we try to do is, rather than come up with arbitrary guideline rules, is to look exactly at how our building's closeness, and this is our closest area, is impacted on the units across the street.
Right.
So we're much further back here, and these corners open up.
Understood.
So really it's just in this zone of the Bainbridge. The problems that occur to this building by sliding the bar are extreme. We also were very concerned, as I've said repeatedly, about this facade. And you have to leave these corners where they are to get the FAR. So if you move the bar, it becomes an H instead of a C.
Now, what do you mean by to get the FAR? What do you mean by that?
To make the building economically viable.
Okay.
Floor
aeration. Well, no, I know what FAR is, but I don't understand why you have to get to a minimum FAR.
To make it economically viable. So we did look at this, and we looked at this in part because of your colleague who's not here today, Paul Mortensen, who we showed this to. But the red line here represents our previous 50-foot shorter scheme, and the blue mass, bluish-gray mass, is the current scheme. And we looked at the Bainbridge units, and these units have street-facing windows, so we picked these two and the center one. And you can see, in each case, our new design has a wider angle of view available up and down the promenade than the previously approved scheme. The other thing we looked at were the solar angles, again, at Paul's suggestion, and there's no question there's an impact, but it's a wash. That when we looked at this, the approved design and the revised design, we looked at it at the equinox, we looked at it at summer solstice, and we looked at the winter solstice, and the net result here is that the new design is actually better in the morning and the afternoon, and not as good in the middle of the day when most people aren't home. And we also looked at this, that as you slide the building to the southwest, this site is exactly 45 degrees, so it's really hard to describe it.
I wonder which way is it? This way?
So anyway, sliding the building 5 additional feet makes minuscule difference to the amount of light reaching the Bainbridge. I mean, we would have no building left if we slid it far enough to really make a difference.
The most important thing about the series of slides Craig just showed you was we have studied this really carefully. I think we've tried to do, and again, you know, Bethesda is trying to be a city. And cities have certain characteristics. Given this site and your guidelines, we believe this is the most responsible design we can come up with. That to me is the really interesting drawing. You can talk arbitrarily about, you know, what setbacks are and how they work, but really what is important is how each unit works that's across the street. Yeah, there's no question the center unit is fairly negatively impacted. The rest of them, not so much. It certainly is better than the approved building.
The red lines, right?
Yeah. If we don't get this building approved, the building we will go build instead of this building
is closer.
And the gray, bluish gray, is in response to the guidelines.
Right.
Yes.
Where are the balconies in terms of that bluish gray area? The balconies are outside of that bluish gray area.
I can't touch it, but yeah, the balconies are.
As you can see, the balconies are quite open in there.
Mm-hmm. So they do add a certain amount of mass.
Yeah.
So I guess the question is, do you need all those balconies? Because without them, you actually have a less massive kind of building.
You have a less articulate massed building.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have a less good piece of architecture. Mm-hmm. And the one of the things, this drives all of our clients crazy,
mm-hmm.
We have a concept in our office called the passive user. And it's the person who gains nothing from a building being built.
Mm-hmm.
He walks past it, he looks at it, he or she has to experience it. It's a
mm-hmm.
part of their daily life. And one of the things that we try very hard to do is design the best building for the passive user. Could we eliminate every other balcony?
Let me clarify. Many of the balconies, and you did a great presentation about some of the precedents for the balconies, and the balconies, particularly on this side that face Old Georgetown, I think add a tremendous amount to the overall design. I'm talking specifically about the balconies on the promenade facade, because those add a fair amount of bulk to the two areas on the promenade facade that pop out.
Go back to the rendering. I think in the rendering you especially see that, you know, the soffits of those balconies are going to be really beautiful, right? I mean, no, oh, the rendering through the through block connection.
The one
that was in, I think, Elliot's presentation. Oh, okay. That one right there. I mean, you can see that you not only have the bay projections, you have the bay projections and the porch projections, and those soffits, I mean, I think in a lot of your precedents, those projections would have come down to the base and resolved there. Here, they're sort of hanging out. And, I mean, when I look at this, maybe because they're black, they really jump out at me.
In a good way or a bad way?
They're distracting. I mean, I think you're talking about how they're projecting, mm-hmm, and they're enclosing the space. I think Amanda was picking up on the same issue. I think, you know, the beauty, again, of the precedence is that they resolve in the base.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, though, this is Elliot's rendering.
I couldn't quite
tell. It was a...
Here's where we get into a criticism of landscape.
No. It's just this was a quick adaptation that they did from their previous rendering of the previous scheme, mm-hmm, and they don't have those balconies correct.
Mm-hmm. I just wonder if, because we've talked about that space, which isn't going to have, you know, again, a lot of long views to that promenade, especially for the upper floors, if it would help to make those projections a little less bulky by not having balconies. I have to tell you, I think it's likely that very few people, except on the uppermost floors, will really use those balconies a whole lot. But yeah, so it's just a question, just a thought, a way to make it a little less bulky on that one facade.
I don't care particularly about the balconies in the middle. Mm-hmm. They don't serve a particular architectural function for me.
Mm-hmm.
They happen to be some of the MPDUs, so I think eliminating them is to make our MPDU units less good than the rest of our units, which I have some philosophical problem with. But if anyone's, and they are the lowest rent in the building, and balconies are expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean...
How do other... I'm talking too much. How do other people on the panel actually feel about
that? Let me just
finish.
Yeah. I do believe these balconies are really important.
The corner ones.
The
yes.
corner ones.
Yes, absolutely.
The ones that are here and here are incredibly important to the
mm-hmm.
building.
Yes.
I like these because they tie it back in. But they're not necessary. You don't see them anywhere particularly important. So, if you want to get rid of those, you know, I'll let you and Eddie talk about it, but...
What's the depth?
They're 5 feet, I think, aren't they?
They're 5 feet inside Claire.
Yeah. So
and the middle column of balconies?
They're all the same.
Those are inset.
Yeah, but they are.
With a slight projection.
Yeah.
So the other thing I would point out is simply, in your guidelines, which we were following, balconies are exempt, and projections less than the majority are allowed in the street
mm-hmm.
step backs, and the provisions calling for additional step backs in the pass throughs appeared in your guidelines in the last draft only.
Yeah, we are
and
talking about the formulaic part of it
I have a solution
yeah.
that may make everybody happy. I don't know whether it'll make Eddie happy,
mm-hmm.
but one of the things we could do here is we could make these balcony rails. So that they were much more transparent. It's cheaper, so I know Eddie's not going to complain. It solves your problem. I don't think it's going to look as good. I don't think it will be as nice in the space. But it is a solution to your problem.
Well,
because it isn't that slab that's just the problem.
I'm interested in hearing from the panel.
Okay.
So.
George, what do you think?
Obviously, when I was studying this earlier, where is north? And I kept thinking the building was reversed. where you had to step back in the courtyard on the narrow promenade and the flush reception on the south side, then I think of all kinds of reasons why that doesn't make a lot of sense from your standpoint in terms of welcoming Southwark orientation.
Also, I don't think it makes a lot of sense from the old Georgetown Road side. I think this is a much more interesting facade.
No question about it. And the only, you know, let me back up and say that, you know, the presentation, as expected, was extraordinary. And the only weak part of this project is the whole narrowness of the promenade, 35 feet, with an existing building on the north side, northwest side of it. And so it gets very little sunshine of any sort. I mean, it does get some angled morning and evening sun in there. But on the other hand, I'm going to harken back to what you mentioned in your discussion, that the urbanization of Bethesda, while we want to keep it as humane as possible, it does transform the community into more of a vertical high-rise environment. And these relatively narrow pedestrian pass-throughs are not wide-open parks where we have trees. And I noticed that your landscaping, I was going to ask Elliot earlier, where you're putting in this space that will grow. And I see that what you've done is put very little in the space because obviously it's mostly shadow. But I think that the suspended lights between the buildings, the nature of the quality of the materials, the fact that you do get some peaks of sun at certain times of the year into the space, and the comfort of the space, meaning the relatively small width of it, relatively small length of it, could be a very positive pedestrian environment. People think that people want highly sunshine driven open spaces in urban environments. The reality is, where do people walk? They walk on the shade side. And that's where am I drawn? I'm drawn to those intimate spaces that let me see the sun in the sky, but let me be comfortable, particularly in the summertime. And I think that makes this promenade work much better than what you initially see when you look at it. The other thing is that at this height, and David also mentioned this, the lower 10 stories of this are not impacted by anything that we're talking about. Because the reality is the relatively small width of the promenade, it's a tight space. No matter whether you pull it back 10 feet, 15 feet, even 20 feet, I don't think it makes any real difference in the quality of the people from the middle of the building down. So I'm using a lot of words, and I apologize for that, but my summary is that I don't think, honestly, Gwen, the balcony intrusions make a big difference to me in terms what that space feels like. It is a narrow, intimate space, elegantly finished, and I think that's going to be what it is, no matter how we diddle with the pieces around it. So I think that David's idea, perhaps lightening the railings on the balconies, might make us feel better. I'm not sure that it makes any real difference in the perception of the space from an urban design standpoint. Mm-hmm.
What really, you know, is a concern about us, to us, and as you walk around the world, you'll see this. There's buildings that have depth and texture are much more interesting to look at than buildings that are just flat planes.
Mm-hmm.
And what we tried to do in this building is, and it's part of adding a greater glass area. If you want to have the greater glass area, you have to do something to mitigate this sheer, large plane.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we've tried to do. You know, as I say, the one thing I do like about the guidelines and the way they've worked is I think they have enough flexibility to create a great city. And, you know, if guidelines become too prescriptive, you can't create a great city.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think, you know, that there are spaces like this in Chicago and New York and England. There are a lot of places like this in the redeveloped parts of London. And they're really quite lovely. And really the notion of going through a compression is a very Frank Lloyd Wrightian.
Right. Yeah, I just want to say I completely get that. My concern a little, and I think it's going to be a lovely, intimate space. I think it's going to be very successful as a promenade. What we see happening, and I know, like I talk to Laura about this all the time, that concerns me is that we have so many spaces where, and this is not just this building, it's a lot of what we're seeing throughout Bethesda. You go 20 feet up and then suddenly the building pops back out. And, you know, whether it pops out 5 feet or however many feet, it pops back out. I think that is, I have a concern about how that makes the pedestrian feel. You can even just look at the Bainbridge, which is already in existence across the promenade, and they do the same sort of thing, but they actually even have columns, and the area pops back out. And it's not a comfortable area. You don't have the columns, I get that.
Rolls are higher.
And it is higher, but I'm trying to figure out how can you minimize the area of it popping out. So I just want to be very specific on what I'm suggesting. I'm not suggesting touching these balconies. Those would be exactly as they are. I'm not suggesting touching these balconies exactly as they are. I'm talking about these, and maybe these, although I'm less concerned about those.
I would say these are important for turning the corner.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say these are as important. And if you wanted to remove a couple of, you know, these balconies, and that made a huge difference to you.
Because of what, and let me, the other thought was, then if those balconies didn't exist, could this area become even glassier than it is, so that you would give those folks some benefit of having a glassier, sunnier area, even without a balcony. We did that the other way. Mm-hmm.
I mean, what you're saying is exactly what we addressed by making the long side of the glass wall rather than the short side of the glass wall.
So you can't do like a turned glass corner on those.
We can do anything. We think we've designed the building well.
Mm-hmm. I think, again, my concern as a pedestrian walking along that promenade.
But as a pedestrian, you're not going to experience
this. Yeah, but you are going to experience the fact that as you're walking here, it pops out and you're in even more shade, and I'm trying to minimize the distance that that happens. Right now, it goes from here to here, and you're in shade. And all of that, and you're in the shade, more shade. And if you minimize that, you're going to end up having a slightly opener, more open feel on the pedestrian.
You are not going to be in any different amount of shade because that's the north side of the building.
Well, I mean, that doesn't speak well because that says the whole thing will always be in shade, which I hope isn't, you know, isn't.
Can I just testify for a second on the way the sun looks there? So right at about the middle of the building, I sat in an office for over 40 years.
It's a chain link fence.
15 feet away from the Bainbridge.
It's attached to the chain.
Until last March 1st. And there's a lot of sun in the morning.
Can you go to those?
Sun
you know, it's up there. The sun comes from the Bainbridge side at an angle that will shine on this facade and bounce around. And in the afternoon, it's pretty bright. It's very bright.
Mm-hmm.
Coming from a little bit to the left of our building, shining onto the Bainbridge, bouncing around. So mm-hmm. there's actually, I had to close my shades in the afternoon, facing that way. It's pretty strong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, reflected light angle.
We're about to wrap up. I'm sorry, David.
Yeah, I want to talk about a few things. I think the squared off balconies are much more successful than the rounded one. I think mm-hmm. the language over here is much more positive than this mm-hmm. kind of schizophrenic language here, which is squared off and rounded. Those rounded balconies are relating to those rounded balconies. It seems to me that that tower wants to have its own kind of integrity. So it would seem to me that those would be rounded balconies, and these would be squared-off balconies, because those are squared-off. Because right now, when we look at that elevation, we've got squared-off and we've got rounded. So I think there's a kind of a concern there in terms of the reading of what is tower and what is tower here, because that's round and square, round and square, round and square. So I think that's an issue. Personally, and I'm really at odds with the guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
I find this very disturbing that plane doesn't come down to the ground and that
that plane doesn't come down to the ground. That very strong vertical gets stopped by, you know, this plinth, and I think it should come down to the ground. I don't think that impacts adversely the quality of the promenade. I think it actually accentuates this idea of power versus passageway. If you have the lighting at that level, you know, those crisscross lights that you mm-hmm. have, okay. I think that helps define the zone of pedestrian use, etc. But to me, I know there's this idea about once you go up, you can step out with these balconies, etc. I find that architecturally not as strong as these planes coming down, even to the point of that move there. But I realize that, in a sense, you can't do that because of the guidelines. But in a sense, if you're altering, you know, the findings, which are excellence of design, and I think those are exceptions that are could be at least.
This one I really like. I mean, I would argue strongly for this one. Mm-hmm. These, I understand your point. I don't have a choice.
I know. I understand so, that.
Well,
I mean,
you
exceptions.
Do have a choice, right. But you get less FAR if you right. do it a different way.
No, if I bring these down the ground,
no,
I get more FAR.
Push the whole thing back and bring it down to the ground. Then it would be a different choice.
Then we get this huge flat wall, that's which right. I really don't think is a good solution.
Exactly.
No. Well, again, the choice being what we talked about, pushing the whole thing back 5 feet, bring those down to the ground, and have the center section push back
right,
5 feet. But I know you don't get your FAR that way.
In a sense, that grounds this, and it makes the whatever is behind these windows, i.e. some retail and or the offices, etc., engaged in the promenade. You know, somehow it just seems mm-hmm. slick. And I must say I'm confused. What properties do you own?
Right now?
So, on St. Elmo Avenue, yeah. there are 5 25-foot nominal lots.
These guys over
yes.
here. This is what you own.
Five individual lots.
No, that's a townhouse.
We don't own the first and the second one adjacent to our property. We own the third, fourth.
Here's the Google Maps if you want to show it on Google Maps.
Okay. So, conceivably, if they all of a sudden acquired all this property, that would be, you know.
You own this little one-story building and the lots next to the one-story building?
That's why we have these buildings back.
So we're talking about the same
I'm sorry, on the other side.
Yeah, so we own, our building goes to the ground wall.
I see, okay. I see, okay.
Well, that's sort of the townhouse. It's called the townhouse.
I see.
Misleading as a townhouse, but it's bigger than that. But.
1, 2, 3. This is... And on the other side, there's a really big building on the corner
of Rolls Royce Hill Road. That building in the garage floor has to work as a unit.
So I don't want to cut this conversation short, but we do have a really long day today.
Understand.
So a few things. It sounds like folks are very supportive of the architecture generally, but the one sticking point is the tightness between this building and the Bainbridge. Just to clarify for everyone, the design guidelines say allow balconies to encroach in the setbacks if they do not significantly add to the perceived bulk and mass of the building. And that is what Gwen was mentioning and others were mentioning. So do you all feel like there are red flags for this project to receive the 10 public benefit points, or do you think they can move forward to the next stage and look at this recommendation of sort of addressing how to reduce the perceived bulk in the promenade?
I'm not concerned about the.
You're
width,
not concerned about
personally.
It. Okay.
I'm not concerned about the width of the promenade. I actually walked through the existing space right now. It's pretty mean, and it's going to get 20 feet wider.
Right.
35 feet.
And it's very well used.
35 feet is going to be, I think, is going to be a nice space. I'm more concerned about the width of the space between the two residential buildings.
Right. That's what I'm mentioning. Yeah.
As you go up higher.
Right.
Not the promenade, but the width between the Bainbridge and this building.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which, exactly right.
Mm-hmm. So the
which they're not.
Huh?
was the Bainbridge actually.
Well, that's really interesting because I thought you owned both properties.
No.
That's why you were doing it.
We have been working with them, and they are, you know, they supported actually the first building, which is closer.
So, any other thoughts on what folks need to do to move forward with the project in terms of recommendations? Do they need to address that separation? Are there any other large issues?
I think they could redesign the facade of the parking garage at the end of the promenade as you walk. And you look at that nice sculpture, and then you've got this parking garage, which is
right.
So you could do some painting or something.
So I just want to clarify for their direction for the next stage.
I mean, I for one don't believe that the changes we're talking about will be significant in terms of the experience of the space from either up above or below. So I'm not on board with what I'm hearing about wholesale changes in balconies accomplishing a great deal. That's just my opinion. I think that possibly perhaps bringing a little back into the balconies or some lessening of the overhang might improve subliminally a little bit, but I'm not sure it's worth it. That's my opinion.
Alright, so it sounds like part of the panel supports exploring how to improve the separation distance. Others think that not much can be done, particularly with the balconies. Like we're sort of split here, but that generally they're very positive about the direction of the building, and that it sounds like if there aren't red flags for the building to receive 10 public benefits.
I think you said 15.
No, 10 is the minimum.
Gotcha.
Expect then that they need to receive the minimum.
Yes.
And then at site plan, we determine the exact.
We're sure.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you all. And again, I'll send out the notes.